The following is a paid program on the VOCM Big Land FM radio network.
This is The Law Show with Butler Wills and Estates. The views and opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of this station. The Law Show with Butler Wills and Estates on the VOCM Big Land FM radio network.
Good morning and welcome to The Law Show with Lynn and Chelsea from Butler Wills and Estates. Today we are going to be talking about something that we get questions about every single day. Every time someone asks about getting a will package done, the question comes up of what happens if you pass away and you don't have a will. This is something that we see on a regular basis. So we figured we'd share some information about what does happen if you pass away and you don't have a will.
Generally, I always tell people nothing good really happens if you pass away without a will. There's a total loss of control over everything.
Absolutely. And according to a recent statistic that we've mentioned before, 74% of Newfoundlanders don't have a valid up-to-date will.
Yeah, and some of that 74%, they have a will, but it's not necessarily up-to-date. A lot of people say things to me like, my will is 25 years old, is it still okay? And so when you ask for a valid up-to-date will, yeah, some of those people do have wills, but whether they're going to do the job or not is another question.
Well, and in a situation where maybe you have a will, but it's not valid, it's like you don't have one.
Oh, it's exactly like you don't have one because it can't be used for anything.
So when you're in this boat where either you don't have a will or you have a will that's 40 years old and no longer applies to your situation, or maybe it wasn't valid to begin with, what happens is, well, the phrase is that you die intestate.
That's right.
Right? In wills and estates law, when you make a will, you're the testator. So if you don't have a will, you've died intestate.
Correct.
And so instead of having someone who takes care of your estate, who pays your bills, collects your debts, all that sort of thing, you're relying on intestacy law. And basically what that says is, it goes to who the law says it will. You have no choice.
Well, and that's what I mean by losing control over everything, because when you make a will, you make your choices about who's going to get what, who's going to be in charge, how people are going to get things, like maybe over time or what age. But when you die intestate, you don't have any of those choices anymore. The law says who's going to get it, and it might not be who you want, but that's what you're choosing if you choose not to make a will.
And with a will, you can choose who you want to be in charge of your estate. But if you don't have a will, someone has to step up and ask the court to be that person.
That's right. When you make a will, you appoint an executor, and that is the person, like you say, that takes care of everything for you. And if you don't make a will, then there isn't anyone. And when someone comes forward, like you said, and they apply to the court, they're asking to be an administrator. And once they are appointed, it's similar to being an executor. It's almost exactly the same. But the difference is that that person has no authority until the court says they do. So sometimes nobody steps forward, or it takes years.
Well, and we're going to talk about that in more detail a little bit later on as well. But to start, let's talk a little bit more about exactly what intestacy is. So we have a law called the Intestate Succession Act.
That's right.
And that decides what happens with your estate.
That's correct.
How does that work? What are the rules about intestacy?
About who gets what? If you are married, and in Newfoundland and Labrador, that means legally married, not common law. If you are married and you have no children, your spouse is going to get the whole estate. If you're married and you have one child, your spouse is going to get half and the child is going to get half. And that means a child of any age, and it means a biological child. It doesn't necessarily mean a child with your spouse. It just means a biological child. And if you're married and you have more than one child, your spouse gets a third, and the other two-thirds are divided among the children, regardless of how many there are. Even if there's 15, they will share two-thirds of the estate.
And it's important to note, like you said, that this is biological children. Stepchildren don't count.
That's right.
Even if you raised them from the time they were a baby.
That's right. We're talking biological and adopted children.
Because adopted children legally are the same. as your biological children?
Definitely, for all legal purposes, which includes inheritance. And just to go back to your point about somebody being in charge, you know, we can sit here and say this is how the law divides up the estate. But until there's somebody in charge of the estate, there's nobody to divide it up. It's not going to just happen.
But when that person steps forward, this is how they have to distribute things.
That's right. After the payment of debts and expenses, this is how they have to distribute the rest of the estate.
And so when you haven't decided who gets what, you haven't chosen someone to receive something, this situation could very well involve someone that you wouldn't have included.
Oh, absolutely. That happens all the time. Not everybody's on great terms with all of their children. Some people want to do more for one child than another, or would have liked to had they made a will. Sometimes they're estranged from one of their kids, or maybe they don't want to leave anything to the biological child that they haven't seen in 30 years. So you lose control over all those things if you don't make a will.
And especially in Newfoundland, common law spouses have no inheritance rights. If you're not legally married, you don't automatically inherit anything.
That's right. And, you know, the lack of a will affects other things besides who's involved. In your will, people sometimes like to do things like make arrangements for their pets. You know, who's going to get their pets? They like to give something to a charity that's touched their life. They might want to set up a scholarship. And all those kinds of things won't happen if you don't have a will. They can't happen because you haven't said your wishes.
All right, we need to take a quick break here, but we will be right back with The Law Show talking about intestacy.
The Law Show with Butler Wills and Estates will return in a moment on the VOCM Big Land FM radio network. This is The Law Show with Butler Wills and Estates on the VOCM Big Land FM radio network.
Welcome back to The Law Show with Lynn and Chelsea from Butler Wills and Estates. Today, we are talking about what happens if you pass away without a will. And before the break, we were talking about the Intestate Succession Act, which is the act that decides what happens with your estate if you pass away and you haven't made a will. So we mentioned that it depends on several factors, so whether or not you're married, if you have children, how many children you have, if any of them have a disability. All of these factors come into play if you pass away without a will. Now, we had mentioned the division of what happens if you're married, but what if you're not married? And in Newfoundland, this applies if you live common law with someone, regardless of how long you've lived together.
That's right. If you pass away without a will and you're not married or you're living common law, if you have one child, the entire estate will go to that child. If you have more than one child, it'll be divided equally among the children.
And this applies even if you don't have a relationship with those children.
Yeah, that's right. And this is why you get such strange outcomes sometimes when there's no will, because families can be complex, relationships between people can be complex, and it you know, the law doesn't step back and think about, you know, how did you like that person or how did you get along or anything like that. It just, if you have that legal relationship, then you're in line for a piece of the estate.
So, for example, if you have a child, say you had this child in high school, you're not on good terms with that child, you don't have a relationship. 15 years later, you're living common law with someone, they have a child, you've been raising this child for years, but you pass away without a will.
Yeah, if you have, if you are the parent of that common law person's child, then the two children will share the estate equally. But if you go into a relationship with a common law person and that's not your child, then the outcome will be that your biological child that you haven't seen in all those years will get the estate and the child that you've been raising will not.
And your common law spouse won't get anything either.
Yeah, and you know, people won't thank you for that. You know, they get pretty upset when they realize that you haven't taken any steps at all to protect them that way. So yeah, you'll probably be cursed.
So what happens if you're not married and you don't have any children? You're just a single person.
Then the next people in line would be your parents or one of your parents, if only one is still alive. And if your parents have passed on, then your siblings. And from then goes down to nieces and nephews. So it's quite extensive, you know, the little tree that just goes further and further.
A lot of options for who it will eventually reach.
That's right. It doesn't usually get beyond siblings, usually, but, you know, in Newfoundland and Labrador, families do tend to be large. So there's usually at least one sibling still hanging around.
So there is the sort of misconception or myth floating around that if you die without a will, the government will take your estate.
Yeah, I've heard that many times, and I've heard variations on it that even if you do have a will, they'll take a chunk of it. But no, the government will only get your estate if there's absolutely no relatives can be found at all, you know, on any sort of how far you go, you can't find anybody. Then under the Ultimate Heir Act, yes, the government would take it. That's pretty unusual, though, that you can't find any relative of any description.
So any nieces or nephews, any cousins?
Grandchildren, somebody, right?
Any blood relative.
Yes, blood relatives, that's right. That's important because all the intestacy laws do go on the bloodlines, which is why common laws get left out too. They're all based on, like I said, the bloodline of your ancestors. So that's why there's usually somebody.
And we've also heard that the government will take a portion of your estate no matter what.
Well, they don't. The only thing that I suppose you could look at it that way is there's a probate fee if you apply to probate your will. Or if you go to the court to become an administrator like you would if there was no will, there is a probate fee. So I suppose in a way they're taking 0.6% of your estate.
But there's no portion that just automatically goes to the government.
No, the only other stuff besides the fee would be tax, income tax or capital gains tax. And that's not automatic. That depends on what you own, how long you've owned it. All kinds of factors.
And it's not a death tax or an inheritance tax?
No, we don't have any death tax in this country.
All right. So we had mentioned a little bit earlier on that someone needs to step up and apply to be the person who's in charge of your estate. And when it comes to wills, that person is the executor. You've chosen someone, you've named them, you've put them in charge of this job. But without a will, there is no executor.
That's right.
So when you pass away without a will, the name for the job is administrator.
That's right.
And it's essentially the same job as being an executor. They have to pay your taxes. They take care of your home and your personal goods. They divide your estate according to the intestacy laws.
That's right. And, you know, I just want to stop for a second where you're mentioning about paying the taxes and paying the bills. One of the things that people ask me frequently is whether the executor or the administrator have to pay it out of their own money, and they don't. And the reason this is important is that sometimes when people pass away without a will, nobody steps up to be the administrator. That happens all the time. And one of the main reasons when I'm talking to people in the family and I say, why does anyone want to do this job? One of the things I hear is, well, I don't want to take on the debts. I don't want to be responsible for the debts. But the executor or administrator is only responsible for paying debts from the estate. And if the estate doesn't have the money to do it, you don't have to come up with it yourself. And no one's going to ask you to.
All right. We need to take another quick break. But when we would come back, we will continue talking about being an administrator for an estate.
The Law Show will be right back. This is The Law Show with Butler Wills and Estates on the VOCM Big Land FM radio network.
Welcome back to The Law Show with Lynn and Chelsea from Butler Wills and Estates. Today, we are talking about what happens if you pass away and you don't have a will. Now, before the break, we were talking about how someone needs to step up and apply to the court to be your administrator, which is essentially the same job as an executor. Now, we're all somewhat familiar with the idea of probate, where the executor takes a package of documents down to the courthouse. The court signs off on them and says, yes, everybody do what this will says. But when it comes to being an administrator, how do you actually get appointed as an administrator?
In some ways, it's similar because you do prepare a package of documents and you send them to the court. Nobody has to actually physically stand up in front of a judge and ask for this. There is a package of documents, but it's not the same package because it's a different situation. First of all, when you're becoming an administrator, there's a hierarchy of who's entitled to do it. And so if you are the person who's first in line, then you just go ahead. But what if you're not the person who's first in line? For example, if someone passes away without a will, the person with the first priority to apply would be the spouse.
Does that include a common law spouse?
No. And so if you are the spouse and you don't want to do it, then who can do it? That would be one of the kids. But say there's six kids. There's no priority among the children. So if only one is going to do it, then the other five have to sign off. Or say two of them are going to do it, and so the other four have to sign off. So there's a lot more pre-application documents that you would have to do before it actually even gets to the court. And the package includes some of the usual things like an inventory of the estate. The administrator would swear an oath that they're going to carry it out to the best of their ability. You know, things like that. And there's a petition that describes who everybody is and what the relationship is to the deceased and all the usual information so the judge has a picture. One of the other things that's different for an administrator rather than the executor is the question of bonding. And what this is about is the payment of debts and making sure that the estate is carried out honestly and that it goes to the right beneficiaries. So the idea is that if you're an executor, you're not required to get a bond. If you're an administrator, you are. You have to get a bond, meaning the court wants some reassurance that you are going to do the job properly. So everybody that applies to be the administrator has to deal with this issue. And there's basically two ways to do it. One is that you go to an insurance company, and I only know of one in St. John's that does this, and you purchase a bond. And basically you're buying an insurance policy that says if I don't do the estate properly and I don't pay the debts, then the insurance company will step in and indemnify me.
And when you buy that bond, it's for the value of the estate.
Yes.
Plus the ongoing...
Well, there's a premium and you pay 3 years' worth right up front. Yeah. So it is based on the value of the estate, like you said. And so for some people, it's thousands of dollars. So it's a bit hard for some people to come up with.
So that could potentially be a large chunk of money.
Well, yeah, sometimes, you know, regularly I see them for $5,000 or $6,000, which if you were able to use the estate money might not be so bad. But the thing about an administrator is until you're appointed, you have no access to estate money. So you pretty much have to come up with it out of your pocket or somebody's pocket, because otherwise you can't get it. There is an alternative to buying the bond. And because no money is given up front, this tends to be a more popular option. You can get what's called two sureties. They're guarantors, basically. So these are people who would agree that if you do not carry out the estate properly, you don't pay the debts, or you run away with the estate to Bermuda and you don't pay anybody, these people will guarantee the estate. They'll indemnify the people involved so that all the debts are paid. So you can get any two adult people to come forward, but they have to be people who are, their net worth has to be the equivalent to the estate, basically, right? Because, I mean, there's no point getting somebody with not a nickel to their name to be a surety because they wouldn't be able to put up any money.
So if the estate is worth, say, $100,000, someone has to actually be able to come up with $100,000 if the
if
need
necessary.
Arises.
Yeah. They don't, you know, very rarely do they have to. Very rarely comes down to that. But they have to be willing to, and they have to be in a position that, yeah, if it came right down to it and the court wanted the sureties to come forward, they'd have to be able to come up with it from somewhere.
Well, in most cases, if you're applying to be the administrator, you know it's a lot of work. And so chances are not good that you're volunteering to take on this huge job just to run away with the estate.
Yeah, that's true. It's most people are more honest than that. And if they don't know what they're doing, they will get some help to figure out how to do it. It's very rare that the sureties end up actually putting up any money.
So what happens with that bond? Say when the estate comes to an end, you've wrapped everything up, all of the beneficiaries have received what they're supposed to. If you've signed on as a surety or a guarantor, what happens at the end?
Well, when the estate is wrapped up, the beneficiaries will sign a release, which basically says, I've gotten everything I'm supposed to get, I'm satisfied, and I am now in a position to agree never to sue the estate or the executor. And that indemnifies the whole estate. So the guarantors or sureties are also released by that.
All right, we're going to take another quick break here, but if you would like to book an appointment with Lynn to get your will package done, give us a call at 221-5511, and we'll be right back with The Law Show.
The Law Show with Butler Wills and Estates will return in a moment on the VOCM Big Land FM radio network. This is The Law Show with Butler Wills and Estates on the VOCM Big Land FM radio network.
Welcome back to The Law Show with Lynn and Chelsea from Butler Wills and Estates. Today we are talking about what happens if you pass away without a will. Now, before the break, we were mentioning that there are some things that an administrator needs to get, like the bond, that an executor doesn't need to have in order to do the job. And when it comes to being an administrator, in comparison to being an executor, being an administrator is much more difficult.
It is harder, yeah.
And part of it is due to the fact that there are regulations that apply to administrators that don't apply to executors.
There are some, yeah. The bonding being one of them. And another being that an administrator has to live in Newfoundland and Labrador, which it doesn't apply to executors. They can be pretty much anywhere. And that leads to situations that we see pretty often where people are calling from other provinces and saying that, you know, a parent who lives here in Newfoundland has passed away and there's nobody here to do it. And there's people that would be willing to be the administrator, but they live in BC or Alberta or somewhere else and they can't do it. They're not eligible.
So it makes it much more troublesome than it would be if you had appointed an executor.
Definitely, because now all of a sudden they're trying to figure out who fits within the rules and how are they going to manage it. And the access to information is a big one for administrators. Like, for example, I said earlier that you have to file an inventory of the estate. And when you're an executor, you can go around to the banks and the insurance company and wherever else you need to go, and you have a copy of the will that appoints you, and you've got a death certificate, so you've got this little chain from here's the person, they've died, here's the will, it appoints me. And so therefore, the banks will, for example, tell you how much is in the account, and the insurance company will tell you how much is in the policy, and things like that. But when you're the administrator and you have absolutely no authority, you're just a stranger. And you're going up to the bank and you're, can you please tell me how much money's in my mom's bank account? Well, they're not going to tell you.
Legally, you're just someone who walked in off the street.
Yeah, and that makes it tough. It's very frustrating for an administrator. And, you know, a lot of times they worry about that and they come in to sign the inventory with me and they're saying, well, I found a statement in the house, but it's 2 months old and I don't know if it's accurate. But it's the best you can do without the actual authority. So I always reassure administrators that, you know, the wording of the affidavit, for one thing, it says to the best of my information and belief, because everybody knows that an administrator can't just walk in and get the same information.
And I think that's where a lot of the nerves come from, is it's a sworn document and you're swearing to the court that this is true. But the part that gets left off the end is you're swearing it to be true to the best of your belief.
Yeah.
So if new information comes up, you can then share that with the court.
And that's right. And that happens sometimes. If you do the best you can with the inventory, and then once you've been appointed the administrator, you go around and you're gathering in the bank accounts, and suddenly you find out, oh, there's a savings account too, and it's got $50,000 in it. I didn't know about that before. Then, you know, you would basically file a supplemental affidavit to the court to amend the court record to be accurate, to say what really is in the estate.
Well, and that makes the job of the administrator more time-consuming than being an executor.
Yeah, because you can't necessarily do it right the first time. You end up going back and doing these extra affidavits, which you almost never have to do for an executor.
And as we mentioned before, there are sort of pre-application things that you have to do to be an administrator that take up more time, whereas an executor just shows up and says, here's the will, this is me, and you're done, basically. But with an administrator, if there's someone with a greater priority than you who can apply, they have to sign the form saying that they're okay giving up their legal right to be the administrator. And they have to sign a form saying that they're okay with you then taking over the job.
Yeah, and that doesn't always go smoothly, you know, because lots of times in families, you'll see people that don't want to be the administrator, largely because, like I said, they're afraid of taking on liability. But they don't necessarily want someone else to do it either, because they don't think that person is honest, or they think that person influenced mom or dad, or for some reason they don't think they're a good choice, or maybe the other person's in bankruptcy, or who knows. But lots of times people don't agree to let someone else do it. And there's also people out there that won't sign anything, period, for any reason. They just won't get involved in anything. And they just basically hide out and hope that it all goes away. So it's all very well to have these rules and procedures in place, but people don't always want to do them.
And in the long run, it ends up being more expensive as well.
I suppose it would be, because you have to do more work, and you probably have, if you have a lawyer, they're probably doing more work.
Well, and if you're in a situation where someone won't sign their renunciation or they won't sign their consent, and you have a lawyer putting in the time to try and explain to them exactly what it is that those forms say, what exactly it means for them, and there's communication going back and forth, eventually it adds up.
Yeah, and there is a fair amount of this explaining that you're talking about, because when you give a person a piece of paper and you say, this is about the estate, and you're giving up your right to apply, in their minds, they quite often take the leap that they're also giving up their share of the estate. That is quite often a question that I hear is, well, what exactly am I giving up? And the thing about it is that if I'm acting for the administrator to apply, I'm not that other person's lawyer. I'm not the lawyer for the person who's signing off or renouncing. So it's not really up to me to explain to them. I mean, I always do, because they don't have their own lawyer, but it adds a lot of work to what I have to do. If I have to explain, sit down with six different people and explain they're not giving up the right to the estate, they're just giving up the right to administer the estate.
All right, we need to take another break, but when we come back, we are going to talk about what happens if no one applies to be the administrator. Stay tuned for The Law Show.
The Law Show with Butler Wills and Estates will return in a moment on the VOCM Big Land FM radio network. This is The Law Show with Butler Wills and Estates on the VOCM Big Land FM radio network.
Welcome back to The Law Show with Lynn and Chelsea from Butler Wills and Estates. Today, we are talking about what happens if you pass away without a will. And we've mentioned that someone has to step up and apply to the court to be the administrator of the estate. But what happens if no one applies?
Yeah, and that happens, of course, because either there is nobody here that can do it or will do it, or nobody wants to. Both of those things happen. And it depends on what needs to happen with the estate. It depends on what the assets are. For example, if there's a house that the deceased passes away owning a house and nobody steps up to be the administrator, what happens with that house? I mean, if no one sells it and no one looks after it, eventually, I would assume that if they don't pay the taxes, it'll just get taken or it'll get foreclosed on because no one's paying the mortgage. But nothing good is going to happen to the house. Sometimes, when depending on what needs to happen, perhaps the public trustee, which is a part of the provincial government, the office of the public trustee will sometimes be appointed as the administrator. And that happens fairly often when there is no one else who can or will do it. That basically just means that it's sort of a last resort, in the sense that you don't choose them. They step in usually, you know, if they know ahead, that's great. They don't always know ahead of time. Sometimes by the time they get called in, an estate's been languishing for months.
Does someone always have to apply? Like, what if it's a very simple estate?
Well, again, it depends on how simple it is. I mean, if the person passes away and owns no real estate, and has basically lives on CPP and OAS and has a very small bank account, maybe nobody does need to apply to be administrator. say the only asset in the estate is a bank account and it's got $4,000 in it. There is a process that the banks will allow people to go through, which basically requires everyone who would inherit on intestacy signing off on an indemnity form. The banks don't do this really often, but they do when there's only one asset and it's very small, and they do it so that the estate is not drained by a probate or administration fee. It's just a way of getting the estate out to the family without having to go through legal fees. So that's one possibility.
And the value of that asset, does that vary from, say, if it's a bank account, from bank to bank?
Oh, yes, it varies quite a bit. It's not something that's legislated. It's a bank policy, whether they will do it or and at what level they'll do it. And a lot of times, of course, it depends on how well they know people. Because in a lot of smaller towns in Newfoundland and Labrador, they know you quite well. So they may feel that there's very little risk to allowing this form of distributing the estate.
They know your family. They know your children.
Right. And they're pretty sure that they know who needs to sign this form.
Now, sometimes people assume that things happen automatically when they pass away. That just magically all these different banks and insurance companies and all sorts of different places just somehow know that they've passed away and that things need to get given to certain people.
Yeah, it's interesting, you know, that people do that. And partly it's because we say things like when you're the joint owner of a property and the other person passes away, you automatically own the rest of the property. And we say it that way, and it's true that the right of ownership passes automatically. There's still paperwork to be done. I mean, the land registry people don't know that you've passed away. And even if they do know that you passed away, they don't have the authority to just take your name off a piece of property and do what with it, give it to someone else. So there's still paperwork that needs to be done. And people are surprised by this pretty often. We have people come in and they say, well, no, I've never changed this and I've never changed that. Well, didn't that all happen automatically? Well, no, it didn't. And that's one of the things that executors and administrators have to do is notify people and get the title to things changed. Take names off bank accounts, for example. Change the name on the house. If someone no longer owns it, you change the name.
So what happens automatically is your right to have it, but the actual procedural administrative tasks don't just complete themselves.
No, that's right. And like I said, that surprises people sometimes. But if they really thought about it, it would make sense. You know, would you really want someone down in the land registry going, oh, I heard that so-and-so passed away. I'm going to take his name off the house. Well, you know, maybe it wasn't you, or maybe it was your brother, or maybe somebody with a similar name.
Accident waiting to happen right there.
Yeah. So, yeah, there's things like the insurance company and the bank and investment advisors. Yeah, the executor or the administrator has to go around to all of those people with the right paperwork and get everything changed.
And sometimes people have misconceptions about what will happen automatically. Is the idea that if you own a home with your child, that child automatically inherits it. And if you'd like some more information about that, definitely go to VOCM.com and listen to our previous episode about joint property. There's tons of information on that episode about this particular situation. But in a nutshell, intergenerational assets are part of your estate.
They are. They're part of your estate until there's some evidence about your intention, because there's a presumption in law that you put it with that child in trust for your estate. And so people do this because they think it'll avoid going through probate or administration. And then it doesn't work that way. So on top of someone still having to do the paperwork, now you've got a dispute on your hands as well. But you're right, people have some misconceptions. And when you think about it, the people that don't make wills probably have more misconceptions than other people because they've never actually consulted a lawyer about it. And I know when we're talking about wills with our clients, we clear up a lot of questions about what happens. And if you've never talked to a lawyer or a financial advisor or anybody else about it, you probably don't know that.
We need to take another break, but we will be right back with The Law Show.
The Law Show will be right back. This is The Law Show with Butler Wills and Estates on the VOCM Big Land FM radio network.
Welcome back to The Law Show with Lynn and Chelsea from Butler Wills and Estates. We are continuing our discussion about being the administrator of an estate. And we've covered why you would need an administrator. We've covered how you get to be the administrator. We've covered whether or not you always need someone in that position. But there are other factors to take into consideration as well. And one of them is if you have a prenuptial agreement.
Yeah, and sometimes people think that if they have a prenup, they don't need a will because they think it kind of covers the same ground. And there is some overlap, but it definitely does not cover everything that a will would cover. For example, it doesn't appoint anybody to be an executor. A prenuptial agreement would be taken into consideration, though, particularly in a second marriage, because at that point, people are often saying, look, if this marriage breaks down or some one of us passes away, here's what's going to be mine and here's what's going to be yours. Of course, that doesn't deal with children or any other things. But yeah, it's definitely a factor when it comes to the distribution of the estate.
So something like a prenup could sort of give some guidance as to how things would sort of be divided.
It does help. And, you know, I've had cases where there's no will and the spouse is claiming under dependents relief, which is just as available under administration as it is under probate. And the prenup has been used as evidence that the testator always wanted to keep everything separate. And, you know, it's kind of a guideline of it's setting the tone for how they're going to go in the marriage. Is everything joint? Is everything separate? So sometimes the prenup can be used in ways that people didn't really think, but it does give some guidance, like you said.
And something else that needs to be taken into consideration is your pension.
Yeah, that's right. With a pension, you don't have a lot of control over where it goes, simply because pension legislation will say most of the time that if you have a spouse and it defines the spouse for you, then the spouse is the beneficiary. So usually includes a common law, actually, for pension purposes. But what happens if you don't have a spouse and your pension falls into your estate, or your spouse has predeceased you and the pension falls into the estate? It's got nowhere to go. There's no one has access to it. No one can get it out if you don't have an administrator. It's just sitting there, never gets paid to anybody.
So if your spouse has died before you, or if you're divorced and something like that has come up and it goes into your estate, that money just sits there.
That's right, because no one can get it out without the legal authority. So just either never gets paid or it's paid into a bank account and just sits there.
And something else, it's sort of similar, is an RESP.
Well, an RESP is a little bit of a trap in a way when it comes to estates, because they don't work the same way that our RSPs or RRIFs work, and people think that they do. With an RESP, there's somebody that owns a plan, and the plan names the beneficiary, who is a child who is eventually going to go to school and get this money. So people think that if they pass away, the money will go to the child. That does not happen with an RESP. What actually happens is if there's nobody that owns the plan anymore, then the plan collapses, and the contributions that you've had from the government to go back to the government, anything you've earned on those contributions goes back to the government. So by not making a will, you've lost the opportunity to say, if I pass away, then this other person will be the owner of the plan. Because with, like I said, without an owner of the plan, it collapses. So it's one of those things that, you know, maybe an RESP is not your only reason for making a will, but it's certainly something to make a difference to your kids or grandkids or whoever you've named in the RESP.
Well, and the money that the government put in and what's been earned goes back to the government, but the money that you put in to the RESP, that just stays in a bank account.
Yeah, that's right. It's just going to sit there. If nobody has any access to it, nobody can get it.
And what happens after, if it just goes unclaimed?
And this does happen, and I don't recall the number of years, but if bank accounts go unclaimed for a certain amount of time, they eventually get paid into the Bank of Canada. And so the banks can't just keep these unclaimed bank accounts around, so they pay them into the Bank of Canada.
So it could potentially end up going somewhere that you never would have assumed.
No, that's right. I mean, why would you give your estate to the federal government if you have relatives that you wanted to give it to or charities that you wanted to give it to?
And we had mentioned earlier that your estate doesn't automatically go to the government. They don't just swoop in and take it. But if this bank account is sitting unclaimed for years, it will eventually.
It'll eventually get there. And, you know, this is one of the things that's difficult for administrators is to know about all of these things. With an executor, like I said, you can go around, you can get this information from everybody. With an administrator, you're basically flying by the seat of your pants for a while until you get in there into the house, you know, or into the apartment and you look, go through somebody's paperwork. And even that can be difficult. I mean, if say it's, you know, it's your cousin and you show up and you're going to be the administrator and you go to somebody's landlord and you say, please let me in. I want to go through the paperwork in the apartment. You know, you're probably not going to get a lot of cooperation.
We've mentioned on previous shows that executors can be paid for the work that they do. But what about administrators?
Yes, they would be paid on the same pay scale as an executor. So they obviously, when there's no will, there's nothing saying how much the administrator can get. So they would fall back on the rule of 1 to 5% of the estate, same as an executor.
Because it's essentially the same job.
That's right.
All right, that's it for us for the Law Show this week. If you would like accurate, up-to-date legal information sent directly to your inbox, sign up for our monthly e-newsletter on our website, butlerwillsandestates.com.
If you have a question or comment for the Law Show, email onair@vocm.com. This has been The Law Show with Butler, Wills & Estates on the VOCM Big Land FM radio network.
The proceeding was a paid program on the VOCM Big Land FM radio network.